about him. The show's all about it. Melbourne, won't you shout it? We're gonna tell you all about it.
Your host,
Matthew Bronson.
Hello, this is Matthew Bronson, and this is Conversations with Matthew Bronson here on KUPR 99.9 FM in beautiful Placitas, New Mexico. Today, we have some very interesting people to talk to, actually two, we'll call them a couple, Michael Martinez and his lovely wife, Charlotte Perry, who do a lot of things. So rather than me just sitting here reading your bio, we'll just welcome you to the program. Good morning, guys.
Hi.
Good morning. Thank you.
Fellow KUPR personalities, can we say?
Yes, sure. We are.
Okay. How about if we start kind of like, not so much your musical background, but your Placitas background. You're still professional people, but you worked in the suit world for a while. You traveled and travel all the time, and we're going to assume that you call Placitas home. And so, when did that happen, and why did it happen?
Well, we moved out here in 1984. We started building our house in 1983.
Things were a little rougher back then, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. There were. I think there was only two homes in our subdivision at that time. And so we were the third home, and there was a lot of space, a lot of open space in Placitas back then.
And did you have friends or family that had moved out here? How did you find it?
I had one friend that lived here, and he had built a couple of homes, but it had never dawned on me that we could move out here. So
we just got tired of living in the city. I had lived in the South 14 area for a number of years before I met Michael, and my goal was always to get back out to the country. When I moved into Albuquerque, I always wanted to get back out to the country. And so we looked again on South 14, and we looked at some different rural areas. And when we went to, it was called the Placitas Land Company back then, when we walked in there, they fixed us right up. They showed us a lot, and they showed us how we could afford to live out here, and it was really great.
That sounds almost like the stereotype old TV Western, where you go into town, and then there's the surveyor's office, and then there's the land company there.
Yes.
I need to get me some land.
That's right.
Well, at least you didn't have to go out and stake it up and make a map and bring it in. It might have been cheaper.
No.
Well, we kind of had to do that.
Really?
We didn't homestead, though.
But did it feel like it at times with the not having a large grocery store?
Our road was a dirt road. And yes, there was one little grocery store out here then. It was just a mom-paw thing right across from where the now defunct Placitas Mini Mart was. It was right across the street.
Oh, there were two? The Mini Mart and the
other? No, Mini Mart didn't exist yet.
Okay.
It was the Mountain View Grocery.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard of that already.
Yes, but, well, as longtime residents here, do you know why it failed?
Well, the Mini Mart opened up across the street from it, and the Mini Mart had so many more products on the shelves.
And what's Martine's last name? I can't remember.
Anyway, Goudelet? Was it Martine Goudelet?
He just closed it up. Now I think it's just his house, so I think he just turned it back into his house.
Okay. Well, interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated the evolution of Placitas, going back hundreds of years, and now it's a home and a community very much like others. I shouldn't say very much. It's definitely different than most places I've lived in a really special kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
But what draws people to it? I mean, we did house hunting out here for a year, staying in Bernalillo, going north, going south, looking at different areas. On the third trip, going back south to see some houses down Placitas Heights or whatever, I said, what's on the other side of that highway? And we drove up here. As I said, this third trip, spending days and days here, never saw it. Went over and went, this is what we've been looking for.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I didn't, so I'm just curious if other people were as dumb as us, not exploring right where they were staying. You know.
I was going to just say that since I was very young, I used to come up here quite a bit. I used to take the back road up to the crest, Highway 165. When I was an older teenager, I used to go to, there was a bar out here called the Thunderbird. So Charlotte, before I met Charlotte, she used to go up there, and I used to go up there to listen to great blues music. B.B. King played out here in Tawapa back in the 1970. It was a big outside concert, which...
Any idea how big a venue that is?
It was trying to be like a little mini Woodstock. So a lot of the hippies and a lot of the people from around the area went out there and had a.
They had the demographic, from what I understand.
Right, and it was all set up on the outside, you know, with generators and a band called T-Rex was there.
I've heard of them.
B.B. King.
I just figured if B.B. King came, it had to be a pretty good crowd.
When I woke up one morning at my house on South 14, it was like a four-bedroom house, and there were four couples living there. I woke up one morning, walked out to my living room, and John Lee Hooker Jr. was sitting in my living room. That was on South 14. One of our friends had come over here to the Thunderbird to hear him play, and she brought him back to our house early in the morning, so we fed him breakfast.
There you go. And did he autograph the wall?
No. I had attended that concert at Thunderbird the night before, and he did come up and play John Lee Hooker Jr., but I said, that's not John Lee Hooker, you know. But his father did come up and play.
Wow.
The real John Lee Hooker.
So
I'm not saying that Jr. wasn't real, but...
Oh, he was real, and he was real good, too.
Yes, he was.
Well, let's do a little housekeeping. Charlotte, what is your city of birth?
Oh, well, so my city of birth was actually Emporia, Kansas. But then my dad took a job with Boeing, and we moved to Wichita. And I spent the first 18 years of my life trying to figure out how to get out of Wichita, Kansas.
A very worthy cause.
Yes. And so via Aspen and Carbondale, Colorado, I ended up down here living on South 14. And, you know, that would have been 1972. So that would have been, Michael and I met in 1976. So that would have been 4 years before I met Michael.
Okay. And Mr. Martinez?
I'm born and bred in New Mexico. I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So.
And
I grew up in the Old Town area for first 9 years, and then in the North Valley the rest of the time.
That must have been a very, I'm going to say, fun place to be nine. There are all those little alleys, and there's a big park there. It just a lot of places to roam where it's
not
safe.
Not back then.
No?
Back then it was still pretty rural.
Oh.
Albuquerque. There was orchards there in the Old Town area that are all gone where the big hotel is at. And
my.
Orchards across the Rio Grande on the other side, and very rural.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was...
How do you feel about the change? Is that just the way the world goes? Progress?
That's probably why we moved away.
But do you go down there to enjoy it?
I mean, yes.
Yeah, we like Old Town.
My father's house is still there in the area.
Right, and we actually lived in that house for 7 years. It was just right... north of the Old Town area, a little bit north of Mountain Road, and that was a sweet little house, you know, an adobe house that his dad built, and we still get very nostalgic going back there.
Yeah.
You know, it was a neat place to live for a while, but we just needed to get out of the congestion and out to a rural area again.
Interesting growing up in the Washington, D.C. area that at any point Albuquerque could be considered congested.
Oh, right. It's all relative, right?
Yes, it's all relative.
But Michael also lived out of town for a while. He lived up on North 14, right?
Yeah, that was back in the, just briefly, that was back in the 70s when they had the exit ban. So
you never said, "Hey, I want to move someplace. I want to try California."
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, prior to you becoming a couple, because you had lived around. I didn't know, you know.
Oh,
Michael,
if he wanted to move away, yeah, I don't know.
Or were you kind of? It's what I call golden handcuffs, where you get a good job and a good salary, and it's really hard to change.
Well, back then, no, my goal was to become a rock star, so there was no...
So when you go to Nashville or L.A., or I don't know where rock stars go?
Well, yeah, Albuquerque's not the place, so...
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to be a local hero, you know, you hang around here, but if you want to do something big... But you did go out to San Diego at one point and thought that you wouldn't ever come back to Albuquerque...
Okay.
For a little while, summer of 68, so.
Right. But then in 76 you met, and it's been all wonderful since then.
I hope so, hasn't it?
But you were both doing music independently.
Yes.
You both worked for Fortune 100 companies.
Yes.
Did that in any way get in your way of your music? Because I'm what I call a recovering engineer. So doing things that, like this, are not typical engineering kind of mentalities. So having working for those companies, did you go, oh, well, I don't know, left brain, right brain?
Well, when our daughter was little, we have one child, and when she was little, we could still do rock bands and you know, it was at that little house by Old Town, and even after we came up here, we had some garage bands together and so forth. But then, as our careers away from the music world developed, I can speak for myself. My job got so demanding. I mean, I would put in frequently 12-hour days. I would have worked 40 hours by Wednesday.
Sure.
And so... it was just impossible for me to do anything seriously with music for a while.
Right. I didn't know if where you were also growing, Charlotte, was that as your child got older, you didn't want to play as much rock. You wanted to do maybe the theme to Barney. Or
no, it wasn't so much about that. It was just, you know, when kids get into their late elementary years, junior high, and high school, they start getting involved in all kinds of extracurricular activities.
Oh, your mom's taxi.
Yes, and Dad, too. Dad drove the taxi. And when we moved out here, you know, she was 12 years old. And so, you know, there was a lot of driving into Albuquerque back and forth. And, you know, she went to the Albuquerque Academy. And so, you know, there was a lot of... extracurricular activities and
a lot,
so forth.
Yes.
Yeah. But that's part of growing up.
I like to bring up that Charlotte used to run a summer program. When she worked at a school called, what's the name of that school? Amritsar. It's not Amistad. It's Amritsar.
Amritsar. It was actually a Sikh school, and that's where I got my first music teaching job.
And she was the music drama and the music drama.
Fine arts.
And fine arts. And with that, she got this...
I got a job as a program director with the YWCA.
That's it.
So I was working, you know, September through May as a fine arts teacher, and which included music and, you know, developing a lot of musical material for the children to do. It was kindergarten through 12th grade. So I had every casting possibility in my bucket, you know, for the kids to do musicals. So we did a lot of musicals. And through that, then I became a program director with the YWCA and ran summer programs for kids. And those summer programs were on par with the Academy summer programs. We frequently exchanged students, summer students, between both programs, and all of that was predicated on my first degree, which was a Bachelor of Fine Arts with a vocal concentrate from UNM.
Yeah. And not to go too far afield of our core conversation today, but when you said you're doing musicals with kindergartners through 12th grade, I remember high school musicals. You could pull off some stuff with that. but I can't see sixth graders doing Porgy and Bess.
No.
She did a musical with the kids called Alice in Blunderland and videotaped it.
Okay.
It came out great. So when she came to Bernalillo, she would put on all of the Christmas programs.
And the whole town would come out to
I'm
see
not
the...
it was just sure Christmas, but it was several occasions.
No, we had two programs a year, and that was kindergarten through sixth grade. And I did have a swing choir with the fifth and sixth graders. But, you know, you can do all kinds. I taught with the Orff Schule Work method of music teaching, which is a very natural evolution of music.
What's that method again?
Orff Schule Work.
Okay.
Karl Orff is the one who developed it, and it's based on all these fantastic instruments, marimbas, xylophones, you know, all kinds of different instruments that teach kids beats and harmonies and all
just
kinds
rhythm.
Of... rhythm. Yeah, rhythm.
Little kids can be kind of klutzy.
Yeah.
They fall down a lot.
Yep. But yeah, so, you know, that was sort of my musical background because I realized that in all these garage bands and so forth that Michael and I had together, there wasn't much money to be made. So at one point in my music, in my own personal music education, I decided to go with music education with a vocal concentrate so that I could make some money in mainstream society.
Sure.
that whole time we were still playing music together with other musicians.
Now, did you meet socially or musically?
Socially.
And at some point you go, hey, want to hear my music? And Cheryl goes, yeah, I want to hear. And did you like each other's music?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, so, you know, I
was... What a deal breaker.
I was over at a friend's house, and I saw a photograph of Michael dressed like an Indian in full Indian regalia with some other people standing around dressed like Indians. And I asked my friend, I said, well, who? I said, I'm dating that guy. And
this is pre-Facebook. You can't check anything out.
It was just a magazine picture or something on a wall. And she said, well, they're famous. That's the Exit band. That's the Exit Native American band. Well, so then the next time I saw him, you know, I questioned him about it, and he started unfolding the story. And meanwhile, I had lived in Mexico for a year and got a guitar and taught myself how to play and have always been a poet and a writer. And so I was beginning to write songs on my own. And that's sort of where I was at when we met. But
right.
He had this rich professional history already behind him in his career.
Now, you were dressed in full tribal regalia, whatever.
Well, if you look at some of the old Western movies and you see the renegades.
Right.
You know. We wouldn't go with the full, like, dancing powwow costumes, but we would take
Michael,
bits and pieces like cavalry shirts and...
But you're native New Mexican.
Yes, but I have...
Spanish, not...
I'm 26% Native American.
Okay.
Remember, Spanish around here, because of the rich history of the blending of the Native American and the purely Spanish in New Spain, creates a mixed heritage.
Right.
So my I can trace back in the generations of my grandparents that were mostly Pueblo. So Pueblos of Isleta, Sandia, and Laguna.
So that was your motivation to do the Exit music.
Not really.
No, you just want to be a rock star. And it was cool to be an Indian back then.
Yeah, we just decided we needed some kind of a sound. So what we did was, our sound sounded like, you know, Native American.
Right.
We would write songs with that, with
you
that
weren't doing,
drum beat in the background and, you know,
you were doing what they call it, you know, like cover. You weren't a cover band.
We never did covers.
Okay.
Well, Michael is a fantastic songwriter and generator of original music. And so, you know, before they were Exit, they were Lincoln Street Exit, And that was a band of guys from Valley High School. And they are the ones who then became the Exit Native American rock band.
Sure. And did but pretty well for a while.
Even in Lincoln Street Exit, they were doing originals.
Okay. No, it's always been originals. So right. I'm a singer-songwriter.
And Charlotte, what band were you with?
Oh, I was with several bands. The Toasters, Poison.
Poison? Wasn't that a big rock band?
I know, but we had the name before they got popular.
Ooh, I hear lawsuit. I'll get 10% to manage that lawsuit for you.
And now we have Amistar.
Yes.
Right. Amistar.
That's
there
right.
You got
Amistar.
It right, Mikey.
Which is, that is a word whose root is the same as amigo. And we all know that amigo means friends. Amistar is a verb. It means to make friends. It means to bring people together in friendship.
And that's your mission.
Yes.
Most bands don't have a mission statement, but you do.
Yeah, we have a mission statement. And it's nice when we play that a lot of the friends and family show up, and even people we don't know, and it's just
if people
great.
Want to come see you, you're active musicians.
Yes.
How
yes.
do we find your gigs?
Well, we'll post them when we play.
Well, in the Placidus area, you'll see posters at the library, at the post office, at the Merck.
Website?
Yes, we have a website. If you go to, it's a Facebook site. If you go to Amistar.
Facebook's on the web, I think.
Yeah, Amistar. And you just look for Musicians Placidus, New Mexico under Amistar.
AMISTAR.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
You roll those R's very well, Matthew.
Thank you. In a semi-retired world, that's one of the few things that my hobby is practicing my R's.
Oh, good.
So, I want to, adjust. Mm-hmm. I worked in the South for a little bit, and I noticed I was picking up a Southern drawl. I'm very susceptible to those things, so in a good way. So, yeah. I wanted to, the type of music that you're doing now, is the Native American type, or all just totally different? It's Amistad's style.
Yeah, you have a whole blend of stuff.
Yeah,
the originals that we write, she's the lyricist.
Okay.
And sometimes the melody.
And sometimes I'm a lyricist, and you make up the melodies to the chord patterns, and I still delve into all of my everything that's in my head still.
Right. Well, I know I had a satellite radio in my car for a while. And you could do a browse,
mm-hmm.
and there are little check boxes for what genre do you want? You know, mm-hmm. pop rock, reggae. What little box would you be by?
For the new Amistar music?
Yes, what you're currently performing.
Well, when we perform right now, we're mostly doing covers.
Okay.
And we do a whole lot. We do rock, classic rock, soul. Rhythm and blues, jazz, a lot of old jazz standards, Rat Pack kind of stuff, jazz. We do some
Who
country
does the Sinatra,
crossover.
Mm-hmm. You do the Michael. You do the Sinatra
no,
part.
She sings this. She sings the Sinatra parts.
He plays it, and so we're doing mostly covers now. And then we're also working on a project of releasing our first CD as Amistar. So we've been doing a lot of studio work lately.
And that's not covers. That's all original.
All original.
And,
yes.
Again, the style?
The style is
it's kind of jazzy,
rock. Okay. Jazz, world rock. Cool.
Yes, there's definitely a world element because we travel a lot. And we travel all over the world. And there's not a place on the earth that's too exotic for us to explore.
Well, let's get to that. But had you traveled independently growing up or before you met?
No.
Or what started?
Well, Michael toured. You toured with that set.
Yeah, just in the United States.
Right. But that's one night here, one night there. Maybe.
She and I decided one day when we were working on our house, we were building on our house, and I don't know, out of the blue, I said, I want to walk on the Great Wall, or did you ask me something?
Yeah, no, you brought home a travel brochure, and you put it down on the ottoman, and you said, I want to walk on the Great Wall before I die.
Oh, okay, so that's how.
I might save that for the last thing I do, because so now I can die. So is that where you went first?
No, we went to Italy first, and then we went to, that was in 2001, and then in 2002 we went to China.
And why did Italy get the top prize?
She's Italian.
Okay.
Well,
I'm Italian.
And you just think of all the great things in the world, and a lot, so many of them come from Italy.
But I think of the food.
Yeah.
And that was a plus.
Yes.
Well, it was incredible. But really, when we went to China, and then I guess from the journeys of Marco Polo, you know, we saw that so, we thought going to China would be like going to Mars. But as different as that culture was, we still saw the connections between China and Italy, and through a lot of the innovations and things that Marco Polo and other travelers on the Silk Road brought to Europe, I mean, there you after you travel as much as we have, you really understand that it really is only one world and one people.
Certainly, but if you don't like congestion, China must.
Well, to travel there and then come back home to this is, you know, the plus. So.
Right. And even in the short time that we've, you know, lived in there, just a few years, I go off to the Consumer Electronics Show every year. And last year we flew.
Mm-hmm.
First year we drove. Not going to do that again to Las Vegas, Nevada. Pretty sights, but
yeah.
Too far.
Mm-hmm.
But when we landed back at Sunport, there was just like this pressure off your shoulders, because it's such a wonderful place out here.
Yeah, yeah. And just walking into your own home after you've been in a third world country, I mean, we take so much for granted in our country. And no matter how angry you may get at the government or, you know, at local laws or that speeding ticket you just got or whatever.
You lead an exciting life.
We live in the best country in the world. And when I walk into my home after we've been gone, it's like, oh my gosh, this is heaven.
Oh, yes.
Placidus and is
Who
heaven
left
on
the bathtub
earth?
Running for 3 weeks? Unfortunately, we've never had that.
No.
Or the refrigerator door open.
The plus of going to China is we always wanted to go to Tibet.
Okay.
So on that
for the
trip,
meditation part and the music.
Just to see Tibet, Lhasa. So we ended up going to Lhasa, Tibet on that trip.
And how long was that trip?
It was 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
That's a respectable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I figure if you're going to spend a day and a half getting there, you might as well be there.
Yeah, we saw quite a bit. We didn't get to see a lot of the south, but, you know.
Right. Well, other places you've been that you'd like to mention?
Well, Egypt and Jordan were pretty remarkable, in India and Bhutan. We've been to Peru a couple of times. We just got back this spring from a 46-day trip from Buenos Aires all the way around South America, and then got off the boat in San Francisco. So that was just amazing.
That was a cruise, yeah.
A 46-day cruise.
It was 34 days, but we spent 6 days between Buenos Aires and Iguazu Falls in the jungle of Argentina,
right.
And then 6 days on the San Francisco.
You know what
end.
Was special about that trip to Iguazu?
No.
We tuned in KUPR.
We streamed it from the jungles of Argentina. Mm.
My concern would be 50 or 60 pounds of weight gain if I was on this ship. I don't want to go for a week.
I gained 10.
Yeah.
I gained 5, but the food gets kind of boring after a while.
You can only eat steak and lobster and shrimp so much.
We met a friend in Argentina that it was kind of out of the blue. I met him on Facebook. He's a guitar collector.
Right.
And
and a drummer. He's a,
So now he streams KUPR regularly down in Buenos Aires.
You know, I found I was on commercial radio in Florida for many years and was kind of at the beginning of streaming and video streaming because, as I said, I was a recovering engineer. That's what I wanted to do. And I found, because small town, maybe 70,000, 80,000, if you had 3,000 listeners, you were number one in arbitrage. That's a lot. Mm-hmm. But streaming and webcasting all over the world, mm-hmm. it very fast you could outgrow your small market.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work for advertisers because some guy in Denmark doesn't want to advertise his tire store here in, you know,
right,
Bartleo.
Right.
But that's a great way to spread the word.
Mm-hmm.
So we have friends around the world that I've met on Facebook. So I have a friend in Norway, and I have a friend in Paris, and
do you,
the ones in Argentina.
Plan any of your travels to go see friends, or, you know?
No, not really. Friends? It's just we want to see someplace. We want to go there. So
I have a little goal. There's a thing called the Traveler's Century Club, and to belong to that club, you have to go to 100 different countries. You don't have to tour them. It's enough just to put your feet on the ground in an airport in
right.
some country, you know, but we're working towards that, and by the end of this year, we'll have 53 countries, and we've been doing some pretty serious traveling since 2001. So you can see that it takes a while to be
right.
eligible to be in the Traveler's
Well, remember the old, and I think this was just phasing out when I was starting to travel with your passport, you'd go and you'd get a stamp from immigration.
Yes.
And then it was so much fun. It's like I used to scuba dive a lot. You look at your dive log, oh, I dove here. And now, even if you're doing the Century Travel Club, you don't even go through immigration. You just get off the plane, get back on? Or do you have to get off the plane?
Yeah, you have to.
The tarmac doesn't count.
Well, I don't know about that. But one time when we were in Costa Rica, we really wanted to get Nicaragua on our list. A bunch of people on that trip wanted to do that. And so we were on the Tarcoles River, right? Mm-hmm. It was the Tarcoles. And we saw the sign, Nicaragua. So we got off the boat, went across the fence into Nicaragua, took pictures of all of us in Nicaragua so we could check that box.
Is that like holding up the New York Times? It is today's day.
Nicaragua on their keep out or whatever.
Yeah, I believe that part.
We also did that in Turkey. We were at the Syrian border. Now, talk about a depressing sight. There's even back in 2008, the Syrians were still leaving en masse out of that mm-hmm. country. So at the Turkish border, they just had all these refugee camps. So we asked the guide, can we go walk into the Syrian border? So we walked up to the guard posted there, and they were nice. The Syrians were nice, but they said, no.
Can't do it.
Can't go in.
Did you explain why you wanted to go in?
Yes.
Wow.
But they still wouldn't let us
go in. What a party pooper.
But they were nice. They were nice.
Well, and Turkey is just a fantastic country for all the arts, and, you know, it truly is where East meets West. And when we go on these trips, we try to buy as much music as we can afford, and the music that is most popular and most typical that all the cool people in that country, or most accurately represents historical sounds of that country.
Right. And like old fado music in Portugal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And that's the kind of music and how we source our music for Red Road Radio, which is our radio show on KUPR.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Charlotte. How did you come up with that name? Because I put into my search engine Red Road Radio, and in like 2.3 milliseconds, I got 13,100,000 hits. So it's popular with somebody. But why did you pick it?
Maybe because of that song I wrote.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a good reason.
I'm still in shock from what you said. How many millions of 13 hits?
13,100,000.
For Red Road Radio.
Yes.
Oh, my
goodness. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It shows you how big the world is.
Is that
internet.
Our Red Road Radio?
Yours came up.
Okay.
So well, number one.
I wonder if there's a million of those.
There could be lots of Red Road Radios.
Well, he said 13 million or something like that.
Well, I know what you're going to do as soon as you get home.
Yeah, we'll go look at it.
Not from the travel thing for just a second. Things go awry sometimes with travel plans.
Oh, yes.
But what about, I don't want to hear those disaster stories because we all have them. But what about
fun.
A country that you were like really disappointed in, or it just wasn't, you know, what you really had hoped for? Because traveling is expensive, and if not a good time.
I don't know if you can really get disappointed at any place you go.
Well, that's good.
There's always something there that just blows you away.
And it surprised me you asked the question that way, because most people would say, what's your favorite place and that you've been? And I can never answer that
I just
question.
Assumed Italy, because you picked that first.
That it's not... Well, and we're going back. We're going back to Venice real soon. But you know, it's just so hard to say, because especially the way we travel, we really try to get in with the regular people of the country. And, you know, for example, when we were in Turkey, we went into someone's home who makes olive oil soaps. And we got to talk, you know, through our guide translating about life, you know,
sure,
in Turkey, and making soap for a living. And, you know, so we just really try to connect and bond with the people on an everyday level.
Do you ever say, all right, we're going to fly to XYZ city, rent a car, and spend 3 weeks? Or is it sounds like you're more on an organized tour
we,
of some
we
kind?
Did that in Spain.
And okay. We did that in Australia.
Yep.
And do you prefer one
and
method of travel
than
the other?
And we did it in France, only we didn't rent a car, but we...
Yeah. In Paris, yes.
Yeah. You like... Would you recommend one way versus the other to people out there who think about traveling?
Well, I don't like organized tours, because they're too fast and you don't get to spend enough time.
Kind of like a cruise. You're in at 8 in the morning, you're out in 6 in the evening.
But you get to see a lot on an organized tour or a cruise.
Right.
The other way, when we rent the car and we drive on our own, if we want to stay there for 2 hours, we'll stay there for 2 hours, right?
Yep. Yep, and you know, you're not on the tour schedule. You can be on your own schedule.
Right. Do you pre-plan your hotels, or are you just going?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Everything, yep.
Yeah.
Charlotte's a great tour guide, or not tour guide, but
travel agent.
Travel agent. Yes. I'm the travel agent.
Yeah.
You brought up scuba diving.
Yes.
And that was another thing that we took up in retirement.
And your favorite dive site?
Oh,
that we could. The Red Sea.
The Red Sea was pretty incredible. We went there in January of 2015. We almost canceled the trip because we got a little bit nervous about ISIS. But I'm glad we didn't. I would go straight back to the Red Sea. We went pretty far south, about halfway down the Red Sea. So we weren't up where a lot of the terrorist activity is happening. And we spent 6 days in Luxor before we drove across the desert to the Red Sea.
And the dive everywhere you go diving, the dive people are just, I wouldn't say every one of them, but you meet some real beautiful people. So the dive crew there was...
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a bad dive trip because of the people. Years. Yes.
All right.
Amistad, Charlotte Perry, Michael Martinez, Placitans. Have we forgotten anything?
KUPR DJs on the Red Road Radio program on Wednesdays from 6 to 8 p.m. Every Wednesday.
That was a question I had. Why did you decide to DJ? I mean, had you DJed before?
No, never.
Well, Michael had DJed parties with a friend of his from work, where you just go and, you know, play records and stuff at parties.
That's when music died. So,
yeah.
So well, they wanted to hear a record. So
I know everyone is thrilled to have Red Road Radio on KUPR and KUPR.org, and we will wrap it up with that. And thank you for joining me here today for Conversations with Matthew Bronson on KUPR 99.9 in the high desert of Placitas. Thank you both.
Well, thank you
so much, Matthew.